Welcome to episode 37 of The Iron Agenda, the podcast about War Machine, horse, and whatever else is on our mind. Hey, everybody, and welcome to The Iron Agenda, the podcast with the strength of granite. I'm Josh.
I'm Dave.
I'm Pat.
I'm Ray.
I'm Kevin.
Two guests.
We have a full house today.
That's right, we do. Kevin is joining us from, where are you from, Kevin?
From Denver, Colorado.
Out in the cold mountains of the Rockies. And Ray, where are you from?
St. Louis.
Oh.
Oh, that's convenient. That's like near here.
Yeah, a little bit.
So Ray's been on before.
Yes.
And Kevin actually recorded something with you, Josh.
Yes, way back when. I don't remember the episode. But
right. Yeah. But Kevin, what other name might people know you as on the forums and whatnot?
By the forums, I go by the, or on the forums, I go by the handle Relicene.
Okay. And are you a press ganger up in Colorado?
Yeah, I am actually a press ganger.
Okay. So that lends us the air of authority or something?
Sure. Also the auteur of searforge.blogspot.com, if you've ever seen that fantastic piece.
Yep, yep.
Which sort of brings up the topic today. We're going to finally wrap up the Mark II discussion, finally. And we're going to do it with mercs, talk a little bit about some pirates, talk a little bit about some dwarves. We got a note on the forums from Clockwork Girl saying we probably should have done a little bit better when we were discussing mercs the first time around. I can't disagree with that. So hopefully we'll make up for that this time around.
Now, once again, Josh, I think you're jumping the gun.
Oh, yeah?
Yep.
What are we doing?
Do we want to do voicemails first or later?
Well, we can. We can do it now. I don't care. Okay. I'm just saying that's the topic of discussion.
Okay, the topic. All right.
That's the title of the essay.
Okay.
You go ahead and run a couple of voicemails, though.
Okay. So which one? Let's do the order we got them?
Sure.
Okay.
First one from Boss Hammer.
Hello, Boss Hammer. I've got some feedback on episode 35. Just listen to it. A lot of the beginning of the episode felt like somebody bitching about the toys he always used to kill people, and they don't work the same anymore. And it's especially bad when the responses on some of the other models are like, oh, I never owned this model, and I don't really care how it changed. You know, everybody lost their stupid things. If there was something that was especially annoying, whether that be turn one kills, trencher, AD, spells that made you not enjoy the game, feats that made you not enjoy the game, all of that got taken away. Black 13th, yep, they were going to get nerfed because they made the game less fun. It was extremely hard to defend against. It wasn't. They were very, very powerful, and I understand they got whacked at the nerf bed, but everything did. If it was way out there in the power curve, it got whacked. If you look at how much the things out of Legends lost compared to the things that came out of, like, you know, Prime didn't get hit very hard. But Legends, you know, everything became more and more powerful, and they had to put a stop to it. So the older the model, the harder it got hit. So overall, you're probably better off putting in somebody who actually, well, for one, read all of the cards in the faction and is willing to look at it from a standpoint of how does my faction now compare with other factions and how do the models compare to each other, rather than saying, how do these models compare to the way I was using them in Mark I? And, yep, things changed. Centurion's not a bad jack. It's still a great jack. It's still hard to charge. It really takes a lot of work to put down because it's high armor. Shield's not disabled. You have to take down all of the boxes. It's no longer, hey, I got the movement, so now the thing is out of the game. It's fantastic. And the Hammersmith, 2 power 17 attacks are fantastic because you have to finish jacks. That's the same reason the Behemoth is 13 points. It's armor penetration, and you have to finish every damn box on the jack. So some of the models, it really did change because of the meta. And that's what you have to keep in mind when you evaluate these figures. And having somebody that just tells, you know, how things change compared to Mark I and that the powerful toys went away, yep, sure did. But I don't think it makes great content. Anyway, enjoy the rest of the show, and I hope that things improve. I enjoy listening to it, otherwise you wouldn't have gotten this, and do it as you wish. Bye.
And now, Kevin, this is Boss Hammer from your neck of the woods, you said, right?
Yeah, he's one of my local players, actually. I was pretty surprised to hear his voice just now.
Well, I should say thanks to Kevin, we've now can pronounce his name correctly. We apparently butchered it last time, So
probably, yeah. Sorry about that.
So what do you guys think?
I don't know specifically what part of the show he's talking about. He said during at the beginning, and I didn't re-listen to it, so I don't know if there was something specific he was talking about. It's difficult to come, and this may not approach his point here, but I think it's difficult to go from one game to another without doing a little bit of comparison from Mark 1. Not that what it can do in Mark 1 has anything to do with Mark 2, any particular model, but, you know, you're coming with some baggage, I guess. You know, everybody likes what they got in Mark 1, or, you know, liked what they had in Mark 1, and if that got nerfed, it can be kind of frustrating. But I think he made a good point in that we need to look at the models in the context of the current game, or in Mark II. Look at a Mark II model in the context of Mark II. Lament a little bit if you want, but I think it's all in one little neat package, and it's isolated from Mark I, so we have to look at it from that point of view.
Actually, when he made that comment, it kind of got me thinking. You know, right now we're looking at the playtest. Things are probably going to change. Mm-hmm. We're probably eventually going to do more Mark II information when Mark II comes out.
Probably.
And so I think that right now, kind of the only way we have to talk about it is coming from Mark II to Mark I, because during the playtest, the big thing is what has changed. Mm-hmm. And on top of that, the Mark II meta hasn't fully developed yet.
Sure.
So I think he has a valid point, and I think there are difficulties talking about the entire Mark II meta yet, mm-hmm. considering how little time it's been out. But I don't know.
I think he was saying, at least what I got from it, was don't grieve too much about losing a particular ability or something sure. like that, because it may not matter in the context of Mark II. But like you just said, we don't know what that context is fully yet. So it's a weird gray area that we're in right now.
Yeah.
So, anybody else?
Nope. Kevin, you have any thoughts?
My whole thought on the subject is that when you look at these rules, we have to realize that it's not Mark II. These are field test rules for Mark II.
That's a good point. This is true.
Just last week we got updated rules for a bunch of things. From my perspective, I got to see that my high shields are getting combined ranged, and other things like the way that reclaim is going to work. And I mean, they've said that this is just the tip of the iceberg as far as changes that Privateer is looking at happening. And one of the things that they've repeated over and over and over is that we have to look at these rules with a blank slate, while also remembering that. Like I mentioned, this is not the finished product. This is nowhere near the finished product. We don't know what it's going to look like. And I mean, just in the first week of playtesting, they completely changed the way that line of sight rules work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if anything, Privateer has shown us that they're certainly willing to not only change things in a pretty drastic way, but to change a lot of things, and that they're really, listening to our feedback. So, I can totally understand that people have complaints about certain issues. I lamented the changes to my high shields for weeks. And, that sticker shock, I think, is still there for some of us. But now that it's kind of wearing off and people are realizing, hey, that maybe this thing that changed, will still work and we'll still have a proper role to play. Or if it doesn't still do that, Privateer is willing to change it. I think that people are feeling more positive about it in general.
Sure, absolutely.
Well, I also think that you can't look at the Mark II stuff, kind of like what you said, without looking at the Mark I stuff and realizing that, hey, I had this really great thing and that's completely gone away. I mean, I don't think that there's really any other thing more evident than the way that the pirates work now. I'm not going to get into a whole lot of lament over it, but the way they worked in Mark I compared to the way they work in Mark II, there are some drastic differences. And as somebody who has gone out and spent a lot of money to play a pirate army, right now I'm really kind of feeling that burn. I might have some legitimate gripes, but I also have to remember, there's what, 6 more months before we're going to see, 7 more months before we're going to see a final product?
7, 8, yeah.
Yep. I guess I'll try and sum this up.
Okay.
Right now, we're looking at, like Kevin says, not really Mark II. We're looking at the field test rules based on the changes from Mark I, because those, it's those changes that we're kind of testing. Yep. That's kind of what we're focusing on at the moment. Mm-hmm. And just like the meta, when Mark II comes out, we'll be talking about everything within the context of Mark II.
Sure.
Yeah. And, this isn't the way we're always going to talk about stuff going forward. And hopefully at that time, when the rules are solidified and we know more about the meta, we'll be able to get more into the models, how they work with each other.
Mm-hmm. We have another voicemail.
We do. We have one more.
And he barely snuck it in right before we started recording.
Yep.
Guys, this is Stubbs out in New Jersey calling on my birthday just to say, how could you have such a whiny K-Dor player last week? I swear you'd think the guy thought that Mark II was supposed to make everything in his army super strong, super tough, and in addition, give it a super defense. Anyway, just joking. I just really wanted to call and say thanks for the rap snacks. Those things were awesome. It almost made me want to break out in rap, almost. But again, I think the podcasts are going great. They are awesome. And there's so much good content that I just can't see how new players can't fall in love with the way you guys run your program. I would like to hear more on the whole Mark II wrap-up with how Crix can be like more like K-Dor with, you know, how come we can't get super tough, super heavy, super hard-hitting attacks so that we can be the all-well-rounded faction that we should be. But again, thanks for the rap snacks, and look forward to hearing more podcasts. Later.
Well, first off, happy birthday, Stubbs.
So you enjoyed the rap snacks.
That's good.
I still haven't heard back from Geist as to whether or not his made it up to the Great White North there. So, Geist, if you're out there and you haven't frozen to death or getting eaten by polar bears, just let us know. Do they have polar bears up there?
I think so.
That's probably a little stereotypical, yeah. Don't you think?
But, yep. Stubbs, thanks for the email, or the voicemail.
I'm sure Norbert enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure he did. I think they should just take all the factions and turn them into K-Dor. I think that'd be the easiest. What do you think?
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know, you mentioned Crix. I think Crix still has a lot of hard-hitting stuff now, and I have no complaints about Mark II and Crix. I think I've said it before, but I'll say it again. I think the people who are upset about the changes for Crix, I think just look a little bit harder. I think you'll enjoy it.
The tricks are there. They're just in different ways.
I think so, yeah.
So we're going to move on to the actual topic today.
Let's move on to the actual topic.
And the first first and only topic for the day is mercenaries.
Yes.
And I was going to make a comment off-air, but I held it to make it now. I think it's interesting that we kind of almost have to have two mercenary experts on the podcast mm-hmm. to encompass the entire faction.
Holy crap. You guys think I'm an expert? That's awesome.
Well, we know Kevin's an expert. We just wanted to make you feel good.
Oh, thanks, man.
But yeah, I think you're absolutely right. There's so much diversity within the mercs. You know, that's sort of their nature, I suppose. So, mm-hmm. Absolutely. So, Kevin, gotten any good Mark II games in with the dwarves?
Loads, actually. I spent about a week of the playtest playing just 35-point games. And actually, no, it was about 2 weeks. And then I spent the latter half doing all 50. So, yeah, lots of games in, lots of experience, lots of feedback, lots to say.
What are your thoughts?
I think that overall, the majority of the changes to the commission are pretty good. Do you want me just to kind of go through caster by or model by model, or
whatever you think the most important ones are? I guess there aren't a whole lot of models to go through, so you might be able to squeeze them all in. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I'll just hit them all real quick. I think that overall, Gorton is largely unchanged. Just to kind of hit the big changes. He lost crit concuss. Which seems to have been taken out of the game completely, as the models that had it no longer have it at all. He got crit slam instead, or I'm sorry, crit smite. And then he lost crater for rift, which acts mostly in the same way. Most Gorton players don't really use it that often anyway, so it's not that really large of a deal. His biggest change is actually with his feet. Landslide is, instead of just models are moved, the way that it works is models are pushed up to 8 inches, which is important for one really big reason, in that pushes are not stopped by rough terrain anymore. So where once a lot of people would protect themselves from Gorton's feet by placing themselves inside rough terrain to stop from being pushed at all, now they're actually going to be moving, albeit at half rate. It's still making his feet that much more difficult to defend yourself against. Linear obstacles and obstructions still obviously stop it. But Landslide, I felt, was really strong in Mark I, particularly in scenario play, particularly in scenarios like Mosh Pit.
Oh, yeah.
Of course, King of the Plateau. I felt like it was actually really strong still in...
Even like Divide and Conquer, shifting people sideways.
Anything where there's any kind of scoring area, it could be used to win pretty easily. So, if anything, it got a lot stronger. And then to compound this, pretty much every model in the game that had an ability to defend against it, that said, my models cannot be moved for any reason, lost it. The only exception to this is Fortify, which just last week got changed to say models can't be pushed or slammed. So only Darius has a way of actually defending against Landslide, which I think is a little too powerful personally, having abused my local players with it excruciatingly for the past year and a half or so, since I really, really started concentrating on the commission. So my actual suggestion to Privateer Press is that Landslide kind of needs to perform like it used to, where Rough Terrain will stop it, because it's just too nasty the way it is now. Durgan is actually completely different than he used to be.
Actually, before you move on, I have a question about Gorton.
Uh-huh.
Now that the rules for throws have changed and you can't chuck him upfield for him to charge a caster, did you ever play him like that? I mean, do you think that is a big loss for the Gorton player?
I played him like that all the time.
Okay.
However, whenever I would do that, it wasn't typically I threw Gorton and then he charged the caster. It was I threw Gorton and then he would feed and he would drag the caster forward. And then my army would kill the caster.
Okay.
I would charge with Bokur, I would shoot him with gunners, I would shoot him with high shields, charge with Forge Guard. Gorton rarely was able to do the work because the positioning of it just rarely worked out. So I don't feel that the changes to the rules for knockdown and models being immune to knockdown make it less viable. It certainly dulls it a little bit, but it still has teeth. And the way that I look at it is this. If Gorton charges forward and pops his feet, he's got a 17-inch threat on it. If you throw him, you're throwing him 7 inches already. And then there's the drift to take into account, but that it's random, and you know who knows how that's going to happen. So you know, I just kind of always just average it out and say, I'm probably going to get about 7 inches. Then he can still advance forward 4 and then pop his feet for 10. So it's 21-inch threat as opposed to a 17. So I'm looking at 4 more inches, which doesn't sound like a big deal, but when you're speed 4, it's huge. So, yeah, the Dwarf Toss still definitely has teeth and should not be disregarded, I don't think.
All right, sounds good to know.
Cool. And then Durgan, yeah, as I mentioned before, he's totally different now. Nowhere near the Warcaster that he used to be. A lot of people actually mistook Durgan as just a Warcaster who got in there and just really kind of killed a lot of stuff. But he was actually kind of a denial warcaster in disguise, and nobody really figured that out until they were hit with it. And the abilities that let him do that were his concussion shot and, what was it called? Shell shock. Concussion shot, which obviously concusses and denies an activation, and shell shock says a model can't attack. Which could be really powerful against armies that use a few really powerful models like, Warjack Heavy List with Darius, or Resnik, or you know what have you. So he lost those abilities entirely now, which really changed the way that he works. Just to kind of go through what he got, his rat went up by 1. He's shooting a little bit more accurately, which is good because he's going to be shooting that gun a lot. And now he just has a single standard shot that he can fire. It's just a range 12 AOE 4 POW 14. I never really had a problem with the fact that he would run out of shots during the game. My games usually end turn 4. Occasionally I'll go to turn 5. So I wouldn't really run into the problem of, oh, I'm out of shots, I can't shoot this gun anymore terribly often. His leveler actually went up in POW. It used to be POW 12, now he's POW plus strength 13, which combined with a couple other changes make him really strong in melee, where he used to have a lot of trouble there. And then he just got a straight carpet bomb shot and a straight case cracker. Both are special attacks, so he can use them several times per game, which is nice. It gives him a little more flexibility where once you really had to choose, okay, is it time to use a concussion shot? Is it time to use a case cracker? Is it time to use this? So that's a nice change. As far as his spell list, bump and grind is the same. It's actually a little bit stronger in Mark II because Thor now has pronto instead of haste. And you can put it on any friendly Rulic Warjack. It does not have to be in his battle group. What that lets you do is it lets you put Bump and Grind on a blaster or a gunner. And then Thor can haste it. Thor can pronto it. And pronto counts as a full advance. So you can actually push with the pronto movement. and then you can activate it, and then you can finally activate it and run it another 10 inches. So that basically lets your blaster or gunner move 15 inches around the field and then push models 5 inches every time it hits another model. And it's just when it... Yeah. So against... If there's something on the field really big that I can't deal with, like if there's a behemoth or if the Deathjack or Old Rowdy and I just don't have the resources in place to deal with it at the time, I can push it 15 inches away and not worry about it for 2 turns.
Oh, or go down a line, something like contested ground, just like Gordon Speed, bump people over the line or, yes, or all sorts of stuff. Yeah, that's
absolutely. I did that just the other day, actually. That's absolutely the way it works.
I saw that spell the first time, especially after they reworded it originally, and it just, that has so many applications, and especially like with Pronto on Thor, that's a whole lot of mosh pitting.
It's very versatile, yeah.
Yeah.
The other use that I found for it is if I can't quite close the distance with Forge Guard or a Driller, what I'll do is I'll just pronto it forward and then run my light behind, you know, the model that I want to attack, and I'll push it towards my own forces.
I guess with 15 inches of run, you can do that.
Most likely.
Yeah. You can, yeah. It's a lot of space, and a lot of people don't see it coming, and then when they do, it completely changes the way that they approach playing Durgan, which is actually good because they go from playing more offensively to more defensively, which I think plays more into his hand. Moving on, Ground Zero is largely the same. He has Inhospitable Ground now, which actually I was really surprised to see, but I think makes him really interesting choice as far as a warcaster, as far as how you have to approach playing him. Playing Durgan is all about making that choice between, do I want to make the investment in hurting a lot of things, or do I want to make the investment in slowing down my opponent to buy me that extra turn to align, to set up my charges, or to prepare for, you know, a turn that might be kind of rough. So it actually works really well. I found that it can actually work great with the new high shields now that they have combined ranged attack. It can buy them an extra turn or two of shooting if you play it right.
Plus, it protects them from charges and makes that armor and shield all more impressive.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's not as effective as it used to be, since you can charge over rough terrain now, but still half.
Well, they have to get much closer. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. But yeah, I can see how it can still be really defensively used.
Right. He has Powder Keg now, which is a pretty expensive spell. It's an AoE 5, POW 14. Costs him 4 of his 6 focus. So it's kind of spendy. A couple things to keep in mind about it, though, is that it does actually work with his feet. The blast damage rolls, you can apply that, so you can get boosted POW 7s. And that if he's actually in the AoE himself, he will get a focus point back. So it can be a 3-focus spell if used properly.
Now, if his on his feet, though, it won't boost the direct hit, which is odd.
No, it won't. It won't boost the damage. No, yeah, it does say ranged attacks, but it will boost the blast damage.
Gotcha.
I would really enjoy it if it did boost it, but, I mean, if it's an AoE 5 spell, you're not really looking to hit, to direct hit as much as hit a lot of models.
Sure.
So, a drift in some cases can actually play in your favor. Primed is the same. And then Redline actually got the boost that I was really asking for, which was a speed buff. Now it's +2 strength and speed, and can run charge and do a power attack, slam, or tramples.
That's huge for your heavies.
Yeah, on drillers it's great. It works relatively well with the rock ram because it does give it a free charge, and which allows you to use assault for free. So it can synergize well with either of those. I personally like the driller more, for obvious reasons. The strength applies to both attacks.
That eats up more of your focus, but that also would work well with Bump and Grind if you wanted to really spend the extra 2.
Well, both are upkeeps, so.
Oh, you're right. So that wouldn't work well at all.
So we mentioned Durgan's feat briefly, which has changed so that friendly faction models gain additional damage die on blast damage rolls and on AoE ranged attacks. And, you know, that seems not too bad, but I'm thinking about the Ruluk army, and I don't see a whole lot of AoEs other than Hearn and John and Durgan himself. Am I missing something?
Nope, you're absolutely right on. I think that his feat in terms of ability to do damage at ranged is not really worth it. I think at heart that Durgan is really more of a 4-star or a highborn caster. That feat, when combined with models like Reinhold, who can give him an extra shot, or Dougal McNeil, who can, well, you know what he can do for AoE attacks. And then things like Marshaled Mules or Mariners, that's gross. That can be really gross. So I think that his feat, and I think in general that he actually works better with 4-star and Highborn. But, you know, I mean, his feat is still useful if you don't look to use it for ranged attacks. Because it says blast damage rolls. So that does actually apply to Backblast.
That's true.
So, and I mentioned before that he's actually a lot better in melee now, and one of the reasons is, one, his feet, and two, Leveler is now Power Plus Strength 13. So, if I'm going to send him in, especially after an enemy Warcaster, what I'll do is I'll prime him, so then he's effectively Mat 8, Power Plus Strength 15, and then I'll boost to hit, because typically I'm going to need 7s to hit, and I want to make sure that I hit. So I'll boost a hit, so I'll get that POW 15 boosted charge, and then I'll be able to buy a Backblast POW 10 that's boosted. And then he'll get a focus back, and then I can do that 2 more times, and then buy an extra attack, and then just hope I hit. So he can do a lot of damage. You're looking at 3 boosted POW 10s, a boosted POW 15, 2 non-boosted POW 15s, and then a single POW 15 that probably will... that, you know, you're 50-50 to hit.
There's a lot of...
So he can mix it up now.
There's a lot of heavier armor warlocks, or warcasters, which I think might be able to live through something like that, but a warlock, I think that would chew through him pretty quick.
Even a warlock during the whole game, just pelting him with boosted blast damage.
Sure.
Just, I mean, that by itself would cause them to...
Well, actually, I want to point out that his feat is actually an additional die. It's not a boost, so he can actually boost on top of it. That's making it even worse.
Yeah, that would... I think especially against hordes, that has some really good use because of their lower armor stuff. Yeah.
I mean, and even against warcasters, I think it's good. I mean, in one of my playtest games, I sent him after Fiora, who was Engine of Destruction and sitting on some focus, and he still took her down.
It's a pretty good feat. I mean, she is a pretty tough nut to crack.
Yeah.
So, yeah, he is certainly scarier than he was, at least in my eyes. I am kind of disappointed that he wasn't stronger toward a Seer Forge only list. I hate to think only one Warcaster is good for that, really. Not that he can't do it, but I was hoping to see him turn more toward the Rule of Ghouling armies.
I can't help but think that the rules are going to get basically a jack with a mortar on it somehow.
Yeah. We are getting new jacks, so possibly the rules, the dwarves might be getting a new one.
Right. Well, the speculation for Seer Forge is that we're going to get a third Light War jack. That, and I mean, this is total speculation, but it's going to be like maybe range 10, POW 12, AoE 3, and a single boosted damage roll will boost all of its blast damage.
Well, if they give it to the Night Wretch, might as well.
Well, yeah. And then the other thing that we're definitely going to be getting at some point, I think, which was alluded to in Legends, is the Grunback Stone Pelter. It's in a Thor's entry, actually. Which sounds like it might have an AoE to me.
Interesting.
Based on its name, but who knows? So
sounds like it could be a spray, but you already have one of those, possibly. So I don't know.
It could be with you.
But yeah, I hope for his sake that the rule gets a some sort of AoE jack, especially a light, because they're cheap. Because I mean, you look at that, and if you want to play a Seer Forge list and saying, "Okay, my feat affects 2 models in my army," it's disappointing.
Yeah, I agree.
It might be really good, but it needs to step out on paper and, you know, be pow in your face to get people excited to play him.
Mm-hmm. So what else we have?
Moving on, and I'll try to pick up the pace.
Oh, you're fine.
We have the Grunback Blaster, which is pretty much the same as it was, save that it's dirt cheap. It is 3 points, and it is Rat 6 now. It's great. I definitely try to take one in every list. I think it can work really well with either Warcaster, and I think that it works really well with Thor for obvious reasons. You can pronto it forward and then stand still and shoot at Rat 8, or you can tune up its attack rolls, pronto it forward, move it forward, and then shoot at Rat 6 with boosted attack rolls with an 18-inch threat. or, you know, and then you can still use, or you can boost damage rolls if you're shooting at something that's low defense, high armor, and then you still have the Jack Marshall boost.
What do you use the blaster to go after, typically? Do you, like, solo hunt with it?
It goes after what it needs to go after. I mean, if there's a solo near that is really high defense because of camouflage or a cloud effect or stealth, now that sprays ignore stealth, I'll send it there. I love Demo Core. I love shooting these things with Demo Core because they can hit without having to boost attack rolls, which means I can just tune up the damage. So boosted POW-12s against Demo Core will hurt them a lot.
So would you say its role hasn't really changed?
No, I think that it largely performs the same that it did, save that it's a lot cheaper and it's a little bit more accurate.
Yeah, that Rat 6 spray is nice.
Yeah, but there's a big difference between Rat 5 and Rat 6, especially when a spray is taken into consideration.
The gunner got the same boost.
Yeah, the gunner got the same boost. It's Rat 6, and it's now range 12, which I wasn't really expecting, but the more I think about it, the more I think that it was necessary, because in my Mark 1 list, my blasters have been replacing my gunners more and more, because the blaster is, I think it's 5 points more. It has a spray attack, which has only a 2-inch less threat than a range 10 gun. So I found that in Mark 1, the blaster is a little more versatile, and in some cases is often a better buy. But now that the gunner's range 12, I think that there's no contest between the two. They don't compete with each other for the same role, that you can take, you're taking them for separate roles, and you're not going to say, I'm just going to take a blaster because it can do the same thing as a gunner if it has to. And yeah, range 12 makes it gross. I mean, it's awesome. And as soon as the new line of sight rules came out, I thought gunners were going to be gross.
Yeah, I
thought
that
they were just going to be ridiculous. And I'm actually thankful that they were changed, because I didn't want to have to play that list all the time.
Still definitely good, though. I mean, we know how good a boosted hand cannon is, and that's what this
guy
has.
I was going to make the same comment. I mean, we talk about Junior a lot. Arcane Shield is great, but he has focus and a gun.
Mm-hmm. So does this thing.
And this thing basically does, too. Except it only takes one focus to boost both shots, or both rolls.
And it's always been efficient, but now with that extra 2-inch range, that's pretty sweet. That's a really good sweet spot for it.
And I think that it's as slow as the dwarf warcasters are, it's nice that at least their jacks can reach out and touch someone.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they definitely have a pretty large threat range, especially when Thor is taken into consideration.
Sounds like he's an auto-include now.
Yeah, I mean, and I've run a gunner and a blaster pretty much in every list Mark II that I've played.
Do you marshal both under him?
No, actually, I prefer to run gunners on Gorton or Durgan, and I prefer to put blasters on Thor. Blasters, I think, synergize better with tune-up.
Sure.
A gunner can be made to work like powerful attack is triggering, but it feels too clunky. It feels kind of clumsy, I guess.
We've mentioned tune-up quite a bit now, and I'm sure we're going to get to Thor, but just for the benefit of the listeners, why don't you go ahead and lay out what tune-up lets Thor do, because I'm sure we're going to talk about it with the other jacks too, a little bit at least.
Okay, yeah, I mean, I should probably just hit Thor, I guess, before I even go on, because Thor is what makes these warjacks gross.
We'll come back to the jacks.
The way that tune-up works is, if Thor is with, it's a special action, and if Thor is within 5 inches of a friendly Rulic warjack, he can give it all boosted attack or all boosted damage.
Very simple, very straightforward, and very nice.
And it really kind of boosts the focus efficiency, and it alleviates the focus strain on warcasters quite a bit. He's been a really nice addition ever since Legends, and I think he only got better in the field test rules.
I'd agree with that too.
Yeah, and you see, we mentioned his Pronto, which, like you said, lets him move up to their current speed, full advance.
I should say, I think it may have been said that's actually a drive, so it doesn't compete with tune-up or anything like
which
that.
Which is fantastic for him. And little man's got a wrench. He's still going to be fixing boxes on those jacks, which are even harder to kill now.
Yep.
Absolutely.
And for, he's two, holy crap, is that a typo? Is he actually only 2 points still?
He is actually 2 points.
Wow.
He was relatively cheap in Mark 1. I think he was only 26 points. He was out of 24, 26, I can't remember. So he was pretty cheap before.
Is it a big deal for him not to no longer have a combat mechanic, I think is what it was called?
Well, I think combat mechanic was only made a big deal because he had to be in base contact in Mark 1 to apply tune-up.
Ah.
Now it's just he has to be within 5 inches.
So that's essentially, it gives you the same freedom almost.
Right.
That's a good simplification, I think.
Yeah, I think it makes him feel less clumsy on the field and gives him a lot Well, it gives him a lot more threat range, because now he can apply tune-up to something that's 10 inches away from him at the start of his activation, instead of requiring that you keep your warjacks really centralized around him within 5 inches. So I think it works great. Anyway, moving on to the driller.
Yep, sure.
The driller is largely the same. It got the same mat and rat boost that all the other warjacks did. The grappler is now POW 16 instead of POW 15, so he hits a little bit harder. Everything else about him is the same. I love the driller now, mostly because his point cost is 6.
That made up all the difference?
Absolutely. Before, in a 500-point list, you know, 112 point warjack, I can't remember which, it represents a pretty significant investment. 6 points is so much less.
Yeah, you know, using Mark 1 terms, I mean, let's look at this jack. He's 1 armor less than a Crusader. His main weapon's 1 POW lower. His primary weapon is, I think, a couple POW higher.
Actually, his arm is the samer. His arm is the same as Crusader. He's arm 19.
That's right. I'm thinking I'm a 20. That's right. What am I thinking? You're right. And before you said it was 112?
Yeah.
So it's almost 20 points more than a Crusader.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's exact same price.
Right.
And that's a steal of a jack.
Right. And I would argue that in a lot of ways the driller is kind of better than the Crusader, save that the driller can benefit from Infuse or the other choir songs. I hate the Protectorate so much. But the things that really make it work is, one, it can really work marshaled now. When you tune up damage rolls, and you can either... And then, so if you marshal it with Thor, you can tune up the damage rolls, pronto it forward, and then it could advance 4. So it has an 8-inch threat just advancing with pronto. And then you can hit with the grappler, hit with the drill, and then buy another attack with the drill, or alternatively boost to hit with the grappler for that first attack to make sure that grip triggers, which lets the drill just auto-hit.
Boosted because of tune-up. That's mean.
Yes. Every damage roll boosted. So 1 POW 16 boosted, 2 POW 17s boosted. That's going to hurt stuff. It's not going to outright destroy a warjack, but if you pair that with a Bokur charge, it usually will.
The only kind of drawback, and you know, we'll talk Mark to playtest meta a little bit, is that with only defense 9, if you take out a weapon on the jack, it's still going to hit you back. It's probably still going to hit you, and it might very well wreck your driller if you can't finish it off. So it does sound like you have to keep it paired up with something to keep it safe.
And Thor certainly helps there because he can help keep it running for longer, but at that point he is sacrificing tune-up to make sure that happens. But typically my drillers usually take damage on the approach. They'll take some ranged fire, which is when Thor isn't really using tune-up anyway, so that's a really good opportunity for him just to be repairing.
I think he's suggesting marshalling him. I mean, as far as I'm aware, in Mark II, Jack Marshalls still don't allow power attacks, including the throw, which typically you'd use this guy to chuck Gordon forward. Would you really end up marshalling him, do you think, or do you think you'd just end up sticking him on Gordon?
Oh, I run 2 now.
Oh, really?
Oh.
Yes.
And the question
I would never have run 2 before, and I am running 2 now, and I am pretty pleased with it. I think that it's a pretty viable option right now. On Gorton, you know, it's the reason why I do like keeping on Gorton is 1 strength of granite, which, despite the fact that everyone complains that it's too expensive, it still is kind of a 5% spell. But when you need it, you are so glad that you have it. And especially now that Karchev can camp focus for armor. And then, yeah, like you mentioned before, the ability to toss is really important. But they're so cheap. They're 6 points. So you can afford 2. That's the cost of the behemoth.
That's true.
Actually,
even
less,
isn't
less,
it?
It's less.
The brace of drillers.
Now, the rock ram, on the other hand, is a couple points higher. What's his role, do you think?
I personally am having trouble kind of figuring out a proper role for the rock ram. You're paying, like you said, two more points for him. For a range 7 POW 15 gun, which it hits pretty hard, but it's range 7. Range 7.
Yeah, that's always been a big problem for this guy.
And then he's effectively arm 20 because the sledge cannon counts as a buckler now, which is nice. And he has assault. And I won't explain the math because it gets kind of involved, but the rock ram on average is going to do less damage than a driller with equally applied focus or tune-up. So when you're going with a rock ram, you're not doing it for more damage. Because the driller will, more often than not, on average rolls, just do more.
What about the loss of, what's it called, Bellringer? I can't remember the Mark 1 version.
Yeah, I think it's Bellringer.
I've used that ability maybe twice.
Ah, okay.
In 2 years since it came out. So I do not lament the loss of it. He has Assault now, which I think helps to improve his damage profile a little bit and helps him to compete a little bit more with the Driller for damage. But an Assaulting Rock Ram is going to do a single POW 15 unboosted unless you spend, and will do a single boosted POW 18 compared to a Driller, which is going to do a boosted POW 16 and then a POW 17. So just on the charge, a Driller is going to do more. Looking at the Rock Ram, you're paying points for the 7-inch range, the range 7 gun, and for the extra point of armor. And I don't really necessarily see if that's worth it. And that could just be my opinion, because there are a lot of people, particularly on the boards, who are in love with the new Rock Ram. So, different strokes, I guess. Do you guys have any? I mean, has anyone over there tried the Rock Ram yet?
I haven't had a chance to try any of the doors in Mark II, and off the top of my head, I don't know why I didn't. I like playing them, so I'd have no input at all, unfortunately. And I haven't seen anybody play them, or at least around St. Louis.
Yeah, I think you're one of the bigger Searforge players, and you've been playing your Crix more lately. Yeah. So,
I think the only Searforge players around here are in Kansas City or Columbia.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, the Ogryn Bakur is, I'm sure you guys are aware, has taken quite a beating in Mark II as far as its rules. The client bonus is now +2/+2 instead of the additional D6. And it doesn't have flying steel anymore, and it has 2 less wounds. At 3 points, I'm not entirely sure it's worth its cost. However, and I know this is a problem that you guys have discussed, I'm not entirely sure that 2 points is an appropriate cost for it either.
Mm-hmm.
It still can deliver a single pretty powerful POW 17 when you need it. But, I mean, is a boosted POW 17 really worth the 3 points that you're paying for it? I'm not entirely sure.
I suppose it's going to depend, like a lot of things. You know, if you can put him on a flank to take care of a solo, you know, that's sort of the image that always gets conjured up in my mind whenever you have a model like this. It can certainly do, like you're saying, a pretty powerful blow. Its shield actually has a POW now, so it's a POW 10.
Oh, yeah. I never noticed that. That's odd.
I wonder if, I mean, kind of doing some speculation at Mark II, is I wonder if we're just kind of thinking him a little too much with, like, the Mark I baggage.
Mm-hmm.
Is he now a slam missile? Because he can power attack slam.
He could.
I mean, is that going to be his main use now?
I can certainly see the value in it, but with the shake effects now in place, when I have slammed with it, it's just, okay, the Warjack stands up and he charges the Bookworm next turn.
Maybe he's a big speed bump then? Too expensive of a speed bump, maybe?
Yeah.
I could certainly see that. And my discussion with Privateer is that because 2 points is too less and 3 points is too much, you've got to do something with his rules to kind of improve him, to make him worth his point cost. And I doubt we're going to see his damage profile increase at all. For 3 points, he still hits plenty hard, and my personal preference is to give him Shield Guard for his client.
That could be interesting.
Is that the base-to-base?
Make him like a Vanguard. He gets +2 for the screening, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Oh, no, that's the if you shoot the Warcaster, he can take the shot.
Oh, specifically for Warcasters?
No, and for the client.
Oh, okay, jumps in front of the bullet, right.
Yeah, he basically jumps in front of the bullet for his client, which makes sense because Bokur are their bodyguards.
That'd be kind of interesting. Give Crix a devout, finally.
Yeah, there you go.
Right. And I think it would actually help some of those units that have high-priority unit commanders like...
That's a good point.
Like Drudge Slavers.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And you could block line of sight to them completely if you really needed to.
Alexia.
Right. Yeah, and Alexia. I think that would be a really kind of nice...
Okay, on that point, bomb. We should not do it then. But no, yeah. That's a good point.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I do want to point out that I think the Boker could be used still as a slam missile, just not focusing necessarily on Warcasters or Jacks, even though the Jacks are certainly going to be easier to hit. I would use that slam missile more on, say, heavier solos.
Sure.
Because they're not going to be able to shake the effect.
Or if you can slam a Jack over a unit or some models in a unit, not with the intent of taking the Jack out, but just as an intent to get a bunch of hits on mm-hmm. units.
Any particular, do you have any particular solo in mind that you would use that for?
Well, I could say, I mean, you're looking at a plus two with it being in 6 inches of the client. Yuri, Manhunters,
Fenris.
Wouldn't you just be better off hitting those models with the polearm though?
Well, with the polearm, yeah, but you bring up a good point. Dragoons are going to be a good target for that. So yeah,
obviously not the ones that can't be knocked down.
They can't be knocked down though. Yeah.
But yeah, the Dracoon won't. But dragoons like Gravis or Fenris or Derek Ray.
Sure. Yeah, Lattimore. I think that's fair.
Or even multi wound models like Democor or something. You have one out on the flank, you know, because they can stretch out farther with the formation.
Slam the leader away.
There you go. Yeah, do something like that.
Yeah, that'd be some really nice placement to set that up.
I have
up.
A feeling these examples we're giving are kind of wishes. I don't know if they're going to show up that often. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know. I haven't put one on the table, so I can't speak too much for it in Mark II, but it's certainly toned down from what it used to be.
Besides that, even with the shakeability, if you're able to slam into a Warcaster and set up charges around them after they're on their can, you know, you taking those auto hits, you're way more likely to kill it before they ever have a chance.
That's true. You actually have to survive to shake.
Well, another thing about the shake, though, is that they're spending focus to do it.
Yep.
If you want to drain them focus, slam the thing. And if they don't want to pay for it, oh, well, it's still knocked down. It's still a resource drain.
That's another good point. Sure.
So what else do we have here?
So moving on, Rock Bottom. I won't touch on him a lot. He's pretty much the same as he was from a commission standpoint. He doesn't have Feign Death anymore. He does, however, I think, get better on the virtue that so many things lost Fearless that the ability to auto pass command checks is a real advantage in Mark II.
I think it's also a very big resource to have with someone like Denegra on the table, which it's not the fear command check that you're worried about. It's the command check that has some god awful effect that accompanies failure.
Yeah.
Letting them pass that without having to, despite, you know, failing a roll is big.
Yep, absolutely. I can totally agree with that. Thor, I touched on a lot. He has Pronto now, which before he had Haste, which just granted an additional 3 inches of movement. Now the Warjack can make an advance, which I pointed out works great with Bump and Grind. You know, it's awesome. I mean, there's not a whole lot to say about it. And then Tune Up is, you know, models within five now instead of he has to be in base contact. He did lose Dismantle, which means he's not hitting Warjacks as hard. I really don't miss it.
Yeah, I think he's got better things to do with his time.
Absolutely. But yeah, Thor's great. I think he's great marshalling. I think he's great just supporting. If you're taking Warjacks in a Searforged list, he should be in there. Hearn and John are pretty much the same. Their relative point cost, I think, is probably the same. Maybe it went down a little bit. It's kind of hard to calculate that. I still feel that the drifting mechanics make Scattershot and the unit as a whole both situational and you know, luck plays in a big factor as far as their performance.
Yeah, you just brought up something that made me remember. We didn't discuss how AoE ranged drifts work. It changed. If the target is not within range of the attack, so if you fall short, the point of impact will not deviate further than half the range of the attack. So if you're a zealot and you're shooting at something 10 inches away, you can't hit it.
Which isn't really a big deal with...
Right.
So if you're shooting at something that's long, you won't drift towards it at all, but you can drift short.
No, you can drift towards it, but let's say I have a range 10 AoE and you're 20 inches away. I can't deviate more than 15 forward total, more than 5 inches forward, because my range is 10. So I can't deviate more than half 10.
Okay.
Okay. So sorry about that diversion there.
That was fun.
Hernan John still.
No, I think I've pretty much hit the nail on the head. there are some players out there that really like Hernan John. For me, their performance has always been kind of inconsistent.
For their point cost, but the fact there's only two of them, I wouldn't mind giving Hern three more boxes. Make him 8/8. Make him just a little bit more survivable.
I just wish he had Arcane Fire.
That
would help a lot.
Yeah,
it would. I really want to like Hern and John, and half the time I do. The rest of the time, usually when my dice aren't allowing me to like them, you know. But I have a hard time including them in a list simply because I don't find them to be that special.
Right, I can certainly see taking them in a Durgan list that concentrates on exploiting the power of his feet. You know, like I said, by taking Durgan and McNeil and Reinholdt and some Mariners and Mules and marshaling them to Sam or to Meg. But you know, within the context of the Sear Forge Commission, I don't really see them as an auto include. I'm hard pressed to say that they're underpowered, because I think that in some contexts they could actually be really powerful. But I haven't had a terrible amount of luck with them. But that could just be my experience and my local meta talking. So.
Okay.
How about the other units?
Okay. I'll do Horgenhold first because they're easy. Horgenhold changed very little. They gained one mat and they lost teamwork. So effectively they lost one mat. They were effectively mat 8 when they had teamwork. Now they're just a straight mat 7. They're great. They're 5-8. I feel pretty good about them. My local players hate them. I'm a little frustrated that I had to go out and purchase and fill out my second unit. I had 16 of them, and I had to fill out that second unit of 6 to 10, so I could field 2 units of 10 now. And that was a little frustrating because they're an expensive unit to buy.
Wow.
But they're great. Yeah, they're 75 for the full unit. They're pretty spendy. But I think that they're still awesome. They're still great. I think in a Warjack heavy environment, they're made even better because they're gonna have more targets on the field that they're going to want to apply those hammers to. So yeah, I mean they're largely the same. I think with Gorton they're great. I think with Durgan they're great. I think they can, if you need that extra mat, if they're going after like a Windrust Sorsha or you know Kane or something, and you really want to make sure that they hit, you can prime them and effectively make them mat 9, power plus strength 13, weapon masters. They'll blow up when they get hit, and by priming them, you are effectively robbing them of their really good armor, which is 18 when they're in defensive line, which actually I also have to mention did change and does affect the way that they play. But I think they're great with either Durgan or Gorton, and I think Signar players are starting, and I've been reading that a lot of Signar players on the boards and even locally are starting to look at Horgenhold in place of other faction models. You guys seeing that at all out there?
I think I might be the only person who owns them in St. Louis.
Okay.
Yeah, the dwarves actually just aren't that popular around here, I think. The only other person I knew that had them was Viking. He hasn't played much lately.
Oh, he does own them? Yeah.
Cool. Well, defensive line now it just says models have to be in base-to-base. They took out the shoulder-to-shoulder rule, which is great because that means you can charge the Horgenhold forward and still place them in base-to-base and benefit from that arm 18. Where
sure.
Before, if they were charging and they would turn to face, the only way to get that bonus would be to run another model so that it was shoulder-to-shoulder.
Norbert last week was talking about how he runs his IFP in trios, so if one of them dies, the other two are still in base-to-base. If you have guys lagging behind, have you moved them up to form a triangle with the two that ended up charging?
More often than not, if a model up front dies, the other two are going to die as well. The way that I typically run my Horgenhold is I'll run them in waves. So if I take a full unit of 10, I'll put a group of 3 up front, and then I'll put 2 groups behind it, and I'll put the third group behind them, so that if someone charges forward into the first group, the second group will tear it down, or the third group will tear it down. So, and with their command 9, they're going to be able to spread out a little bit better than other units. So that's an Unhorgenhold. Hammerfall, which have been the subject of a lot of discussion on the boards and locally. Mostly me just complaining about it locally. They originally came out basically having the same rules as before, save that covered fusillade was gone, steady shot was gone, and they were boosted up to rat 5. And then in the context of the Searforge Commission, they can't advance deploy anymore, which completely changed their role from like a forward tar pit. They were a unit that I would just advance deploy forward, and they would basically hold up and redirect my opponent. While the rest of my forces would move up behind them. They've gone from that to a fire support unit now that they have been sort of granted combined ranged. Which I think really fixed them. I've only had about 3 or 4, I've had 3 games with them so far with CRA. And I think that they're actually decent now. I've found some success running them in 6-man units on flanks. Basically kind of holding up the sides of my army so that I don't get hit in the side by fast-moving cavalry or fast-moving units or solos. And then lending damage towards the middle when we need it. So I think that with CRA that they work. And I neglected to mention that the Searforge Commission now allows all Rulic units to advance move. Which I don't really like the mechanic, because I've noticed that when I deploy so that I could advance move, I have this big, almost 6 to 7 to 8 inch gap between my Hammerfall, my Horgenhold, and Hernan John, and then the rest of my army, who has to actually deploy behind them so that those forces can move forward. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like a clumsy mechanic. I would prefer if they could just deploy 4 inches forward. Not even advanced deploy. I mean, advanced deploy is nice. Who's going to complain? But
it's only a matter of two extra inches. I can't see how that would be a big deal for a 4-speed unit.
Yeah, I mean, I could understand taking away advanced deploy when it was still 12 inches upfield. Mm-hmm. Now it's only 6. Nah.
It's also the deploying second that was actually they're deploying last.
Really, that's true. Really
that's nice. Also true. Yeah.
One of the problems that I ran into with Hammerfall early in the field test was, if I'm going first and I deploy them, they're only going to have a select. They only had a select pool of units that they could go after, because they're only rat 5 pow 10. So if that unit's deployed opposite end of the table in the corner away from them, they're going to have to spend the first few turns running and foregoing their arm and usually getting picked off at range. Anyway, that's pretty much it for the Searforge Commission. I think that they're largely pretty still competitive. I think that they play a little bit different because they lost all their advanced deploy. Hopefully Gudrun will still have it when we see the Hordes field test. Yeah, there it is. I think that they're still pretty gross in scenario play. I personally expect Landslide to be toned down when the final rules come out. I've actually suggested that Bump and Grind be changed to a model can only be pushed by Bump and Grind once per turn. Because I think pushing a model 15 inches away is rough.
God, that's so crazy.
You didn't actually want that model to contribute this game, did you?
Oh, yeah. But yeah, there it is.
And of course, we don't know how Lug and Brun are going to turn out, but they could have a drastic effect on this as well, I would think.
Yeah, who knows? Pre-field test, I had some ideas kind of what they would look like, but now that we see how different Mark II is from Mark I, I've learned just not to try and even bother guessing, because chances are I'm going to be wrong.
All right, so that wraps it up for Searforge. We also have Ray here today to talk about the Pirates.
Man, I love my Pirates.
Take it away, Ray.
Do you still love the Pirates?
No.
Oh.
No, yes and no. There's things I lament, obviously. They got hit pretty hard. The one thing that I will say that I really do like about them is that they are a hell of a lot more simple. You don't have 50,000 things that you have to remember just to try to keep it all in line. Josh and I, we played a couple of games. First one I played with E. Magnus. The second one I played with Bart. And I went really, it was a 50-point game, wasn't it?
I think those were 50-point games, yeah.
Yeah. I went really jack heavy, and man, it was a good time. It was two Mariners, two Mules, and a freebooter.
Yeah, freebooter.
Who essentially was the free jack. From there, I just had a smattering of things. Looking at the Warcasters first, we'll go just straight to one of my favorite ones. We'll go to Fiona the Black. Fiona really didn't change. They changed the name on one of her spells, and they removed the jack-centric spell that nobody ever cast anyway. Other than that, she's pretty much the same. One big difference is that Cultists no longer specifies that it's a non-character unit. So I can put that on the Commodore if I'm running them in a 100-point game, for instance.
She's, just sit her back with it and
yeah,
get the extra focus?
Oh, yeah. And she's, like I said, she's just as good as she ever was. And the fact that she can have seven jack points is nice. That essentially allows me to create what I think is going to become one of my favorite jack tag teams of all time, which is going to be a Buccaneer and a Talon. We'll get to those in a little bit.
Now, did she not, Mark One, have, did she not ignore focus on a caster?
She did ignore unspent focus.
Now, she has Grievous Wounds on Viper and Mark II, which is similar in that it ignores mm-hmm. tough, you know, cannot transfer and whatnot, but seems more Horde-centric, I guess, than it is War Machine-centric.
Yeah, it does.
Very true. Well, you know, she kept Whiplash, so that's actually one of my favorite parts about her is that ability. You know, overall, I don't worry about the focus. You know, especially in Mark II, she's going to end out. Your opponent's going to end out giving away most of his focus anyway, because there's so many more jacks on the table. You know, you've really got to have them down and out to really force them to keep their focus anymore anyway. So I just don't think that's going to be that big of a deal overall. She's just as nasty as she ever was with Telgesh Mark and Nunu Korean Brand and Affliction. She's just incredible. Bart, who is probably the most popular pirate choice, he lost the ability to not be moved via batting down the hatches. But you know, you actually said that, and I was like, oh shit, is he right? And I quickly flipped through and I looked it up, and I was,
Ray, that's what Gordon sounds like right before he beats the crap out of you,
dude. The game that we played, mm-hmm. where you almost killed me twice, two games in a row with a Reaper.
Oh, I killed you the first time with a Reaper.
Poor Magnus got the crap kicked out of him by getting reeled in with a Reaper. That was kind of the wake-up call I needed for Mark II to realize that, okay, yeah, there's certain things that are changing, and the points I'm going to be paying for to build my army is way more Ray-friendly. But because Math and I, we don't get along.
It was a Reaper that you had knocked down the turn before, by the way.
Yeah, it was. I haven't forgotten at all.
Fear the Reaper, baby.
I do. In fact, I actually got one that night because I'm a fledgling Crix player now, too. But, you know, anyway, Barrett barely survived the very same tactic. A well-placed Gorman Cloud saved him from the same surly fate that his traitorous brethren faced.
But then I have to say, your Kel walked up and killed Epic Scar with a single shot.
I can't tell you how cool it is that I sniped you to death.
But what else about Bart?
He lost a spell. What was it? Crow. Which, you know, half the time I wasn't using it anyway. So, again, it's one of those spells where it's not really that big of a loss. I actually lament the loss of not being moved from batting down the hatches more than I miss that one. Everything else is pretty much the same. Powder Keg, which started with him, if I recall correctly, is I don't use the spell that often because it is so costly. I would just as soon put a focus on a mule for a boost and a chance at throwing stuff around the table as opposed to dropping four for one spell. But that's not to say that if I went against something that was, you know, really troop heavy, you know, I wouldn't have much of a problem actually doing it if I had to. His feats, the same. I mean, he lost Rouse too, which I found odd. But at first, you know,
what did that do?
Rouse essentially, if Bart, if he successfully charged something, then all of his jacks got a +2 on attack rolls. It didn't specify on melee or range. Essentially, it helped you get Bart up the field, gave you a great reason to get Bart up the field and engaging troops to make his jacks even better. The loss of Rouse really isn't. It's mitigated by the fact that virtually everything's ranged attack score went up by one, and it plays toward what I think Bart really is better at anyway, which is staying back. You know, half the time when I'm playing him, I'm using him as a loader for a Mariner.
Yeah, I was going to actually mention this. The main way that we've seen him played locally is to stand back with broadsides and a bunch of jacks and just unload turn after turn after turn with some infantry to kind of screen and slow the opponent down. And it looks like that aspect of him hasn't really changed.
It hasn't. He plays virtually identically to the way he did. He can just do it with a hell of a lot more jacks now. At 50 points with 5 jacks, it's still a very viable list, even against something that has a hell of a lot more out on the table, like Statistics Raiders.
Statistics
Raiders, yeah, they're very math-oriented. The statistics.
I've never been able to say it right. You can bite me.
What about Shay? Dave Navarro, how's he doing?
I think Dave actually improved a little bit. Torrent turned into Veil of Mists. Torrent, it used to be I was using it as an anti-Iris field, essentially. It was a 4-inch AoE. Essentially, any enemy model couldn't see through it, which Veil of Mist keeps. But additionally, you couldn't make ranged or magic attacks if you were an enemy model, you couldn't make ranged or magic attacks while you're in it. Okay. All my stuff can see through it fine. And everything from Veil of Mist, everything that was good about that, is still essentially there. You can't, if your enemy models can't see through it, you can. You also get Pathfinder and you can move through obstructions.
Yeah. And other models. Seems a little expensive, but,
if you're going to move it, lets you move through your opponent's lines.
The other thing about Torrent is that it actually moved. This one doesn't, but that's okay. It's still really good. The fact that I can place it where I need it and allow, say, press gangers to move in for some Shanghai fun is just fine by me. Coup de Main, even though it's worded different, is pretty much the same. Okay. Before it was, you could charge for, speed plus 5. This is saying you get plus 2 inches of speed additional. So it's the same. The mule improved in its rat.
The Buccaneer's cheapest crap now.
The Buccaneer is so awesome now. It's just not even funny. Which brings me to the tag team I mentioned earlier. Between, you can do this with Dirty Meg. Dirty Meg with a Buccaneer and a Talon is just a nasty little combination. You know, you use the Tangle from the Buccaneer. Go ahead and boost on the hit just to make sure you hit it, and then move in with the Talon to really just tear whatever you're charging with it up. And I mean, you can tie things down really well with those two jacks. I mean, you've essentially got a two jack unit running around the table. Vanguard actually became affordable in my opinion, even at 5 for a light jack. I think it's when you compare it to its Mark I cost, it was almost cost inhibitive to take it, and you know you were more or less screwing yourself by putting that jack always in front of your caster, right? Especially with say Fiona. But now throwing him in, you know, if you really need to, like again with Fiona, she's the one that is most logically gonna use it. Bart also uses this jack well because of the ranged attack, it benefits from broadside. With the benefits that it offers and the fact that you can essentially just have it plus a little bit of, say, a Buccaneer for free, it's probably worth buying that way.
I mean, with the mat and rat increases, I mean, yeah, its range is only 8, but it's not a bad gun, and it's decent on the assault. I mean, it's by no means a heavier, but it's not intended to be.
No. No, it does the job that it's designed to do very well.
Seems like a good kind of sit back with your caster, and the first thing that breaks through your lines, it goes after.
Yeah, and if you do it right using assault, it's probably going to be pretty screwed. You know, the other jack that really is going to see a lot more play with pirates is going to be Magnus's old jack.
Oh, the Mangler.
Yeah, he is so good now with chain weapon, with thresher, with reach. He's a phenomenal jack.
I was surprised
overall.
They gave him reach, but that's pretty. No, he had reach. What am I thinking of?
They took reach away from the Mariner, which it'll be one of the things that I actually do complain about. Thresher with a 1/2-inch reach just seems silly. I would have personally preferred him kept the reach and lost the Thresher. On the other hand, I mean, it's 6 of 1, 6 dozen of another. On the other hand, if you take away the reach and give him Thresher, he pretty much has the same goal that he always did, and you don't have to worry about things running most of the way to you and engaging you to where your Mariner can't shoot anymore. So, you know, half the time I'm going to love the fact that he lost reach. The other time I'm going to absolutely hate that he lost it.
Did they give him a chain weapon in an update? Because the sheet I'm looking at doesn't have a chain weapon on it.
Yeah, they...
Is that one of the things you're going to add?
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, let's just go into... The rest of the jacks are pretty much the same. The Freebooter being 6 makes him a pretty easy choice on, again, like the free jack costs.
I like his chain attack.
His chain attack is fun. It's the same chain attack he had before.
I know it's not really a pirate jack, but the Nomad does have reach now.
Yeah, finally it matches up. It's actually one of the first things I looked for, because I have a Nomad sitting on the shelf, mm-hmm. and I always felt silly, because it's such a solid, cheap jack.
Oh, yeah.
It always felt silly to put it on the table and say, I want to use this. And I actually anticipated, because I was one of the offending people that did it the first time, saying, hey, does that thing have reach? You know? And now it actually has what it looks like it should have, which, you know, I can see putting him with Dirty Meg himself. Let's see. Let's go into solos, huh? Mm-hmm. Bloody Bradigan got quite a bit more simple. He's got critical knockdown, whereas before he had this whole slew of other things. He had an additional die. You could choose between additional die, push, and an additional attack. Well, he's lost all of his extra attacks. He could potentially attack four times in a round before. Now he gets his two fists, but he gets critical knockdown. He gets something akin to gang. So if he has an enemy model that is in the melee range of a friendly faction warrior model, which is actually an improvement, he had something similar in his previous incarnation, but it said, not Sea Dog Crew, just Sea Dog.
Oh, okay.
So it could have been Press Gangers too. But now you could have Gorman next to something, and he could come up and beat the crap out of it and get that bonus. Stumbling Drunk works.
Well, since his faction is mercenary, heck, he could be teamed up with a Boker some instances.
That's true.
Yes. And actually I've got a Highborn Covenant list that I think is going to be pretty fun. It teams him and a Boker, and since all solos get AD in a Highborn list, you know, granted it's not as good as what it used to be in Mark One, but you know, essentially your entire army starting off 6 inches further up the field is pretty good time. Mm-hmm. So other than that, Stumbling Drunk works pretty much exactly the same way it did post clarification. Essentially, you know, it's as long as he's not advancing when he gets hit, he's gonna stumble around. I think there's still a few things that need clarified. Like, you know, I was kind of sad to see the Sea Legs rules go away. It was a nice, simple thing that they could stack on anything, whereas they've rolled it into so many other rules now.
Well, steady can't be knocked down, at least for Crix. I'm not sure if that applies to other factions, but...
Well, for instance, okay, you have Stumbling Drunk specifies that Bloody Bradigan can't be knocked down. And then you have Lash for the Warjacks, the Mariner, the... Buccaneer and the Freebooter.
Lash isn't just can't be knocked down, though.
Right, but my point is that can't be knocked down is rolled into another rule.
Oh, you're saying that's just extracted wholeheartedly to say it's steady as well as Lash.
Right.
Or, you know, put an icon up there. Done.
that would be fine, too. I thought I'd actually be really put off by the icons, but it's actually made it a heck of a lot easier. Let's move on. Let's see. Bossoon Grogspar. He lost the anti, stationary, which hurts, but I don't know that it hurts that much. His hook is just the same. He lost all of his attacks. I'm not really going to complain about that because everybody lost all their extra attacks. The one thing he did lose that I was pretty sad to see go was slow burn. It's now a 3-inch AoE, which, you know, I'm okay with that. That's gonna end out just playing a bit different. Dirty Meg lost one of her drives. Other than that, she's still just as solid as she ever was. Yeah. Bodge still removes one damage, so
she's not quite as versatile as Thor, but you know, at least she has something to give those jacks Pathfinder. I mean, that can be handy, especially against warcasters that can throw up inhospitable ground, which you've already mentioned. Mm-hmm. Again, like Josh said, you can now charge over rough terrain, so it's not as big of a deal, but it's still huge to have that threat range back.
Yeah, and if you read that, it says that their activation then has to be a charge. It's not an option anymore, but it's not a free charge either. So they still have to use their Jack Marshall bonus to do that charge. So you're going to have to pick and choose when you actually decide you want to give them the drive or just, you know, boost an attack roll or whatever. Moving on to Doc, I think Doc is actually overpriced. I'm sure I'm going to have
really?
Some. Yeah.
Only two.
I know. But his command is 7, which means that his ability to affect the rest of the army is shortened. His command check when he killed an enemy model is gone. I mean, really, he's lost a lot of his special rules, which is good.
But surgery doesn't knock people down.
I know, and I do love
that's
that.
What I mean,
but you know, he doesn't benefit from the 4, 5, 6 tough. He does have tough. He's a little harder to hit, but the bump from 12 to 13 isn't nearly as impressive as the bump from 13 to 14. Overall, his role in combat, however, in my opinion, shrank, and he's less likely to actually start throwing daggers or doing this or doing that. He's going to be hanging back with the Warcaster or, you know, say Bloody Bradigan, and he's going to be healing them up. And the rest of the time, he's more or less going to be running to keep the tough out there on the field. I don't know that he's actually worth the 2 points.
Hmm.
But I can see the argument being made that too many, I mean, because what, how many other solos are there that have a cost of 1? Reinhold, I think. First Mate Hawk, I don't know about all that. She's, her command increased, but object desire was changed so dramatically that it's almost like getting a new model. The way object of desire used to work, Sea Dog's model units in her command got an additional attack. They doubled their strength for their hand weapons, and they were fearless. Now the fearless is gone because that's gone for most of the game. That's cool. So is the additional attack thing, also cool. But now, even though her command is increased by 1, the problem is that it's no longer models units, it's just models. So there, she's affecting a lot smaller area. I mean, she could actually affect most of the table, which, yeah, it was probably too powerful then. I have no problem admitting that. But I don't know if it'd be better if she should just be able to give that ability to 1 unit as per, say, like...
Fiona? Like cultists?
Like Rupert.
Gotcha.
Okay. I don't think that would be bad. Again, I think this is one of those deals. I think she's appropriately priced for everything that she does. I don't really have a problem with much of it, but... You know, and it just might be the pains of knowing how nasty she was previously and how she's not going to be quite that bad now.
Well, she's still got acrobats and a pair of Weapon Master cutlasses. So
yeah.
She still got the ability to go up and over, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, and she's, I mean, she still has tough herself. So it's not like, you know, I'm going to move her up and she's just going to instantly die. Rock Bottom, his weapon, his fire breather actually does fire damage, and it causes a fire continuous effect, which is nice. Coin, his paymaster ability is worded a little funny, but I think we've got it worked out to where he's can still pretty much spend all of his coins in a round if he really wanted to, and you had enough models out or enough units out there to get all of those out. Essentially, it's worded where you can't spend, you can't give money shot to the same unit twice. McNeil, he's the most expensive solo, it looks like, with the cost of 3. But I also think he's worth the cost of 3 for everything he does. He makes Warjack in his command just amazing. You know, park him behind that wall of Warjacks. I mean, I tried it on you, Josh, and it was very effective. You know, during the round where he was able to double powder ration. Yeah. two Mariners and two Mules throwing out that extra pow out there with the extra distance is just as good as it ever was. And with Jax being able to hit even better, there's no complaint there. You guys got anything to say about the solos before I move on?
Not really. Kevin?
I'm pretty good here.
Are you sleeping?
No. No.
All right. Well, there's only a few units left here. First, the Commodore. The Commodore, I've got to say, the Commodore is the one thing that actually got a lot better. Now, your crewmen don't have to be in base-to-base with the Commodore for it to shoot better. I can actually get a rat of 8 on the thing when I am shooting. Essentially, the crewman can be within 2 inches, and they add +2 for each crewman that does the special action, and then the other guy's already a 4. So, because they're all 4, so, you're adding essentially a second guy's rat.
You could get a rat 10, you just couldn't shoot, right?
No, you can get a rat 10 and shoot.
Oh, really? Money shot.
There you go.
You can actually make it a rat 12 then.
I was trying to make a joke, Ray.
That does not work here, sir. I will kill you.
There's one thing we are not here in the Ironton, and that is funny.
Point taken.
Anyway, you can actually get it up to a +10 and shoot. No, 12 and shoot. We just covered this. Are you keeping up, Josh?
No.
All right, here's how it works, okay? You take the canister shot, which is a spray. Mm-hmm. It has a +2 added into it, okay? Oh, so you're at a 6, okay? You take money shot, you're at an 8. And then each of the crewmen add in their cumulative +2s.
And the last one fires.
There you go.
So you can have a 2 at 14 without shooting.
The joke he's making is that the last guy does an aimed attack instead of actually shooting the cannon.
Stop it.
Okay, thank you.
I'm sorry, I had to explain the joke before this went on.
Okay. So that's still pretty cool.
It is. This brings up a point. I want to ask Kevin a question.
Okay.
One thing that the Sierra Forge Commission lacks is an artillery piece. Do you care?
Not really. We have blasters. Well, I mean, we do have Hearn and John.
This is true.
Who, for all intents and purposes, I've always considered to be a proxy artillery piece. Granted, like I mentioned before, I haven't had a terrible amount of success with them. Their presence has, assuaged any desire for an artillery piece that I've ever had. But, I mean, and when I look at artillery, I look at artillery in terms of something that should be going after infantry, which I have plenty of because, like I said, I do have blasters, and they are awesome. So, there it is.
Well, looking at Hearn and John as artillery, that actually helps me like them just a little bit more because they're artillery without all the drawback of artillery. They can run,
they're like the
blow throw. Charge. Mm-hmm. That's great.
I think they'd match up nicely with the blow throw if they had arcing fire.
Indeed.
That and with McNeil, they can be pretty gross. Because McNeil can redirect their shots, and he effectively makes them rat 8 or rat 10 if they stand still.
That means your joke goes up to 16.
Awesome.
Ion and Holt, you guys have discussed the nerfing of them, right?
Yes, we
have. I've played them, and I don't think they're that bad.
No, I've played them in a couple of games, and 2 out of the 3 games that I've played, they were on the table, and they're fine. I have no problem with how they were changed.
There are some slight changes, like loss of the job, but harm is only +2 now, which we've seen as standard looking at the Boker.
Mm-hmm.
I'm actually okay with that. It's simpler, it's a little bit faster to resolve, but making a model unit's attacks magic, it's a model unit now instead of just model. That's pretty big. I mean, granted, more stuff has magic attacks to begin with, but still, that's a nice little stealth buff.
She lost her Glyph of Nero.
Mm-hmm.
But otherwise, I think they've been pretty much stripped down to their core and what they were really meant to be, and I think they did a good job retooling them.
I agree. I'm pretty good with how they are now, so, I don't really miss everything that they
have.
And
now they work for the Retribution.
They do?
Yep.
Oh, wow, look. Those 3 words that I missed because I saw everything I already liked. All right, moving on. Press gangers. Press gangers are cheap and good. They got to keep their tough in this latest round of additions. A full unit's only 6.
Do you feel the loss of the last?
You know, on a purely fluff reason, yes.
Mm-hmm.
The last overall didn't do anything.
Sure.
You know, her individual ability. I actually think they had an opportunity to take her out and make her a solo, essentially. A really cheap, crappy solo. I think it's still something that they could do if they really wanted to. You know, but I don't think it's completely necessary either. With them, you know, they're still doing the Shanghai, which is one of my favorite tricks. You know, one of the things I didn't mention with Hawk is that Object of Desire, I told you there was something else I was forgetting. Object of Desire stripped off the ability to use gang for Sea Dog units.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now they get to keep it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so now my Press Gangers and my Sea Dogs can use gang even though they have Hawk near them, which, you know, helps equal out a lot of the crazy stuff that she lost anyway. So
now Shanghai and Mark 1 required it to be a small based model, right?
Uh-huh.
So now they can just do it to any living model, warrior model.
A Bokur.
Ah, there you go. Shanghai Bokur.
I can Shanghai Cray now.
You can Shanghai Cray.
That's awesome. Anyway, you know, their function and their utility actually got just cleaner, in my opinion. They had all the nonsense taken away from them. They got cheapened up. They kept their tough now, which was the only complaint I had about them in a Mark II format, was that it...
They still have AD.
Yeah, and they still have AD. With the tough thing, the only problem I had with it is that for them to be truly viable, they really needed to have tough. And without them having tough, it meant that Rock Bottom was essentially going to have to blow all of its coins, essentially one round, just to give people tough.
Mm-hmm.
Or if I didn't go with a straight tally on contract, I would have to have Rupert in the list just to give somebody else tough and try to make those 5 coins from Rock Bottom last longer. Now I don't have to worry about that, at least on 2 units. Because I generally feel 2 full units of right. These dudes. The Sea Dog crew, I actually think, are a little expensive. You know, when you compare them to the Press Gangers, they hit a little harder and they get one additional attack. But I don't know that they're that much more effective. But looking at the standardized pricing structure that seems to be present in Mark II, it's pretty much the price they're going to get stuck with. Now, don't take that as a real complaint either. I can still field a fully tricked out unit of Sea Dog crew with 3 riflemen and everything for what, 13 points? That's like a point of, it's under a point a model. And that ties into to Mr. Walls there. The quartermaster is
no more random range in his guns.
Yeah, which, you know, it's one of those things. He kept one ability that I always forget, Monkey Bite, and he lost the one that I could never remember. So, you know, the one that always ended up screwing me in the end, I don't have to worry about anymore, because I would say, oh, he's within, you know, because I was always thinking he's got a 12-inch range because that was his maximum range. Well, so now he has an 8-inch range. And I don't have to forget.
Oh, those aren't hand cannons anymore. I never noticed that.
That's yeah. True.
I have to say that I really actually, on topic, I really envy the fact that you have the Sea Dog Rifleman, because I can't tell you how many lists I've built where I have 35-point lists where I'm at 34 points and I can't do anything with that 1 point.
Mm.
So, darn you, Talion.
And for that 1 point, you get a really nice ranged weapon. Yeah, it's kind of a unit sniper, but man, I gotta agree with you. I can't complain about the rifleman at all. I can, however, complain that the deck gun is just about as useless as it was before. I mean, none of the rules are really changed on it. it just can't keep up with anything. You know, one of the things that I've always loved about the Talion Charter, or just playing the Pirates in general, is that you can really get those guys out on the field and up the field really quick. And then you've got this lowly two guy crew way in the back, hoping to God they can actually see everybody's shoes by the time they actually hit where the battle's happening.
They can run now.
I will give them one advantage, and that is they're only 2 points. They are a sea dog crew, right, which can be cultists and run to keep up with Fiona. They're not going to be shooting anything unless she stands still, but it's probably the cheapest cultists that you can create, right?
These guys actually aren't a sea dog crew.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I misspoke. They are sea dogs, but they don't have the crew total.
No. Yeah, and that's actually a common tactic even in Mark One, is to use them as the cultists. You kill the lead guy, and away they go. It does make her a little slower though, because you know, they still can't run.
They can now. Yeah.
They can now, but before they couldn't because they were an artillery unit.
Right.
So there you go. That pretty well covers my pirates.
And what do you think of the pirates overall?
Overall, I think that they lost some of their flavor. I think that there's still some tweaks that I would like to see, though I think they're rather intangible. I can't sit here and spell out I'd like to see this and this and this, but there just seems to be they're more vanilla than they ever were.
Do you guys think that's kind of across the board? I mean, with the general loss of special abilities on models, it's kind of hard to keep all of the flavor with less text, would say.
Yeah, I think it's definitely across the board things, but I think it's more stark with the privateers, I think, because they were so colorful and flavorful, and they were meant to be these weird off-the-wall kind of models and units, and now that's really been taken away. I don't think it's bad, it's just that they just don't have that characteristic anymore, I think.
I think that one of the problems that I always ran in with Talion was every time I would play against them, regardless of the amount of times that I had played against Italian armies, I would have to spend 2 or 3 minutes just looking over the cards going, okay, what does this do? Okay, what does this do? All right, how does this work? All right, how is this going to screw me and I'm not going to see it coming?
And even then, it still seems to always screw you and you never see it coming, because it's always that one ability that you're like, oh, crap, I forgot about it. Yeah, you know, and that's one of the things I'm looking forward to going away in Mark II, is that I don't feel like every time I win with my pirates, I just screwed my opponent somehow. On the other side of that, like I said, I'd still like to see a few tweaks here and there. And I'd like to just put it out there now. I still want to see a Gobber Cabin Boy.
That would make a good unit, a good Warcaster attachment, I think.
Did you notice, I don't know if you guys have covered this, I didn't actually get to listen to the last episode. Did you notice that there is no, in Mark II, there is no such thing as a Warcaster attachment?
They're just attachments, and a model can only
be attached. Yeah, they're just attached.
Yeah.
I think that's great, personally.
I do, too. It was so confusing trying to keep that War Dog moving at the same time that I Windrushed and then moved Sorsha. It just really annoyed me.
It also opens up the door for them to have other types of, or not other types of attachments, just other attachments, and they don't have to worry about whether you can have two Warcaster attachments and one other or whatever. It's just one attachment, period.
And now Crix players can stop complaining.
I never complained to begin with, but yeah, you're absolutely right.
I didn't say Josh, I just said Crix players.
I know. Yeah, I agree.
So there were a few mercenaries we didn't really talk about, some like the commonplace stuff. Mm-hmm. We've talked about it here and there. I mean, you know, Rupert's changed significantly. His songs are not nearly as good.
Did he keep all three songs? I had to shut down my laptop because my battery was dying. But
yes, he did.
Interesting. But now he can sing the same thing twice in a row and affect the same unit twice.
Yeah, when I look at Rupert, I think, yeah, it kind of stinks that March has been brought down for those who really like playing with it. Mm-hmm. But at the same token, I see that he still grants Pathfinder, and I think about Durgan and Inhospitable Ground, and I go, no!
No, fair enough, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll tell you what, I used to love March. I mean, for the Protectorate, March was fantastic. And to be honest, Heroic Call also synergized real well with some Protectorate stuff. The flexibility on how he performs his songs now are a big improvement. And I think that I don't think he's as auto-include anymore, but when he's on the table, I think he's going to have more flexibility, which can't complain about.
The differences between Magnus and Epic Magnus are so minor, I don't really know that anybody's really going to feel a need to play regular Magnus ever again.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I just because you can play Epics at any point level.
Right. And he does, Epic Magnus does everything that regular Magnus does better. You know, the one thing that I can see out of that I'm going to miss is Blur. Everything else, I'm okay with losing it. Beyond that, Kel has a magic gun. Holy crap, how cool is that, Josh?
It's cool enough to kill Epic Scar in one hit. Because she only had 1 point left.
Well, I'm going to go back to one thing real quick on the Magnuses.
Okay.
Which is a little bit interesting. Magnus the Traitor has Iron Aggression, which is a free charge with the bonus to hit. I'm sorry. Charge and power attacks. Whereas the Warlord has Mobility, which is basically plus 2 speed in Pathfinder. So it's like Magnus is going to make one jack wreck havoc, mm-hmm. where Epic Magnus is going to keep all his jacks moving around a bit more. Is one better than the other? I guess it's going to depend on your play style and the scenario and whatnot. But in most cases, I do like Epic Magnus better myself.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Iron Aggression with Mangler sounds pretty gross.
That it does.
Especially on a speed turn.
Well, yeah, but that bond that Epic Magnus can give the Mangler is even worse.
And what is that bond
about the bond?
This is true.
What is that bond?
It gets a +2 to his mat, and what else?
Additional die on backstrike damage rolls.
Does that make him a mat 8?
I believe that makes the Mangler an 8.
Yeah. And Thresher on top of that?
Yeah.
And
okay, never mind. I take that back.
And a chain weapon on top of that.
That is pretty disgusting.
And Reach and Thresher. And
it's magic. And
and the Mangler's not a Magnus-only jack now?
Correct, yeah. And is it FAU now?
Yes.
Or was it always FAU?
It was always FAU, I believe.
It's really just a Renegade that is now still restricted to 2, I think.
The Talon got increased, too. It used to be a 2. Now it's a U.
As we were flipping through earlier, I realized, and I think this is new, it looked like all the shields had a power of 1 now. Because I mentioned it on the Boker, but I saw it on the other jacks as well, so I think that was universal.
I think it's just 1, yeah.
Yeah, it was just simple
and
one.
Fist got a 2?
Oh, did it? Yeah, it was 1 or 2, yeah.
I want to say it was 2, but I haven't... Because I think like a lot of my jacks have 14s, have 12.
Have you guys talked about Boomhauer?
No,
actually we haven't.
I actually played him in the first game that I played with you.
Oh, that's true.
And holy crap, I am so glad somebody gave me him, even though he was useless for I don't even know how many years. He's actually going to get painted. I'm going to buy 2 more. He is definitely playable in Mark II. I had a fun time playing him. And the fact... Let's see, I charged in, and then when Boomhauer went, I had one guy that got toughed out.
Toughed out, that's what it was.
And then I was able to stand up, and he was still able to take his attack.
Yeah.
It was awesome. So Boomhauer is actually going to start seeing the table with my stuff in Mark II. Crow's Cutthroats, after the ugly ampersand went away, and you actually got to see what Crow's Cutthroats was all about. I was really shocked by the cost of 10, but the abilities that they get for those 10 points at a full unit, I'm not going to complain. I actually like them quite a bit. I think you'll see them more, especially mm-hmm. with the fact that they'll work for just about everybody.
I think they kept poison, which is huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Except for you Crix players.
That's all right. We can still get him.
I still think crows are probably the high shield and forge guard killers.
Oh God, yeah,
yeah, yeah.
Other than that, I really haven't had much of a exposure to the rest of the solos and units that we haven't discussed.
One thing that came up just very slightly in one of our games, Ray, was the use of Gorman's smoke cloud. It wasn't a huge deal, but like the Trencher smoke clouds too, I believe it's back to the really old way where you put a point out and the AoE emanates from that point. So it's no longer within 3, that the center of the AoE is within 3 now.
Correct.
I believe that's the way it is now, or in Mark 2. So that you still have to keep Gorman just a little bit closer, possibly, to where you want that cloud to be.
Yeah, and actually it ended out with Bart in some clouds that I wasn't necessarily anticipating him mm-hmm. being in. I was hoping to be able to just set him behind, and that didn't work out too good.
Yeah, a little extra inch and a half made, it makes a difference in a lot of cases. But other than that, is that about it?
I think so. I mean, there's a lot of, nowadays, there's a lot of mercenaries.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, we didn't touch on steelheads or anything, but I think we pretty much covered most of the stuff.
Yep. Any closing remarks?
I'm glad we're done talking about Mark II until next year.
Yep.
I hope.
Yeah, me too.
Hopefully I'm not lying there.
Yeah.
Well, Kevin, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Hey, thanks for having me on again.
And Ray, no thanks to you.
Okay.
No, we can't mention Ray this episode.
Because, all right.
Yeah.
But on that note, I guess we'll see.
Can I give Ray a shout out?
Oh, absolutely.
Sure.
I'd like to give a shout out to Ray.
Ray, there's your mention for the episode.
Awesome.
We'll see you guys later.
Bye.
See ya.
To contact Iron Agenda by email, send your message to contact@ironagenda.com. To send a voicemail, dial 206-333-0983. Iron Agenda is copyright 2009 by its hosts and released under the Creative Commons Attribution No Derivative Works 3.0 United States license. Opening and closing music provided courtesy of Joshua Salter.